Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, the home improvement man.
Yeah, I've now installed four floors in our new house, so I'm becoming a bit of a professional when it comes to floor installation. Other than the fact that, like, I mangled my hands, I can't really use them today. So, you know, other than not being professional in the way that I can actually do it without injuring myself, we're now the last one left is the main floor, which we're going to hold off for a while. So it's been fun.
Now, what kind of floors? Are we talking hardwood, tile? What are we doing here?
So I've installed a hardwood floor in my wife's office. And then the rest is, you know, just different types of vinyl. I haven't done tile yet. I wanted to do tile in the kitchen, but that happened when the dishwasher exploded and, like, we couldn't plan it. We just had to do it, which is where all of this started. And then once you start doing stuff like this, like when you rip out one floor and you're like, man, that looks really good with the new one, you kind of just do it to the rest of the house until it's done.
And just to remind, I've been in my house for 24 years, T. Frank. That stuff is never done. You always have stuff to do. All right, let's move on. Although I'm sure everybody was interested in the home improvement portion of our show, let's move on to the Penn State portion, T. Frank.
I'm much better at this YouTube and radio. If I were to have a home improvement show, it would just be mostly swearing and wandering around staring at things.
I would probably watch it, all right, because I would be able to relate to it. Okay,
yeah.
That's you know, those guys who are the experts, and it struck me when we put in a water softener in three easy steps, T. Frank.
Oh,
three
sure.
Easy steps. Well, 3 days later. Anyway, all right, let's move on to Penn State. I got a commitment this week. Another tight end, Matt Henderson. 6'5", 208 pounds. What do we know about him, T. Frank?
That Penn State is again early in on a tight end recruit, and a guy who, for example, you know, on three, when he was not rated, not ranked, they looked at the film and gave him a 90 overall grade. So they agree with Penn State's assessment of here is a high-level prospect at the tight end position. And it's an interesting one because tight end generally is, for Penn State and what they're recruiting at, their level and what they're looking for, it is a big receiver that can block. So these freaks that are 6'5", 250 pounds, and can run and can move are hard to find, especially early in the recruiting process, because a lot of these guys are late developers, right? So you need to be able to run and jump and move, and usually that means not being 260 pounds when you're in 10th grade because teams just put you on the offensive line. So there are these guys who have kind of have Luke Reynolds, this delayed reaction of where are you finding the depository for the freak position at the next level? It comes from quarterback, comes from guys on defense, maybe they don't have a position, from big receivers typically, and then they filter into Penn State's tight end room, and then profit, essentially, for Penn State.
And you mentioned this seems to be this trend where they get in on these guys early, they find them early. Luke Reynolds was the last example. Penn State was in on him early, and the next thing you know, he's a top 100 player.
Yep.
This has that same kind of feel to it. This is a tough question, but how does Penn State do this so consistently at that position?
Well, first off, Ty Howell is a good recruiter and a good talent evaluator. So that's the basis is the people that are involved have something to do with the recruiting process. Penn State's recruiting staff, this isn't the only position where they identify top talent before everybody else. It's just the one where they seem to be able to secure and close those deals as opposed to offensive linemen and defensive tackles who go on and, you know, Penn State identifies these guys and then Oklahoma swoops in with an NIL package or, you know, another top school is interested in, and ultimately Penn State, despite being early in, doesn't have enough of the requisite things to kind of close the deal. Tight end, running back, these are positions where Penn State is strong in recruiting and has a track record of putting guys into the NFL. So it's kind of just closing the deal at this particular position. And then I think it comes from a certain understanding of frame, because they do such a good job scouting and they have an understanding, kind of an NFL combine-esque scouting initiative where they have certain criteria that they're looking for in their players, and they are able to identify those markers. And then for the most part, they get it right. They get the assessment of the player right, outside of the physical skills of somebody who's going to make good on all that development. And again, they have a pretty good track record of that.
And, you know, it's interesting, too. You talk about the scouting the frame. I mentioned Luke Reynolds. I got to see him in person a couple months ago, and my first thought, yes, he's long, lean, but I looked at that frame, a layperson's eye, and I said, that's a kid who could carry a lot more weight.
Did you shake his hand?
No, I didn't.
Okay, because it's like a vice grip. Like, I met him at Elite 11 last year, almost a year ago, and just, you know, spoke to him, interviewed him afterwards. And one of those indicators is hand size in terms of, like, your frame and the correlation of your wrist and your hand to the rest of your body is kind of like it's a growth pinch point, right? So then when that is large enough, you can extrapolate that they can carry a good amount of weight. And when I shook his hand, like, he wasn't trying, he just kind of crushed it because he has such a firm grip. So those are just one instance and one indication of, like, what you look for in a potential athlete and growth and development and all those things, and kind of just illustrates your point of he may be 220 pounds right now. Spring, he kind of looked like a receiver, but there's a lot of potential there for growth.
Exactly. And my curiosity is, I'm assuming that this Matt Henderson is the same way. If you and I saw him in person, would look at him and say 208 pounds, I could picture him being 250, 260 mm-hmm. before all said and done.
Yeah.
And that seems to be, you know, one of the keys to getting this position right. Also with Penn State, this happened very quick, didn't it? He was given an offer. A couple weeks later, he's accepting.
Yeah, and that goes to some of the stuff that Ryan Snyder talked about on the show last week when we kind of broke down this commitment of, first off, the player has to be interested in signing with you. Secondly, they have to... Going back to what Penn State's looking for and kind of a big receiver, they had to know that he can do some of the things at the position, like block and you know, have the flexibility to play the position. So they had been tracking him for a while. And in an era of everyone gets an offer so that you can start a relationship, there are still a few times, Peter Gonzalez is a great example from the last class, where some guys still have to earn an offer, where you said the coaching staff says, okay, we really like you, but we want to see these things from you. And if we do, you know, then we'll talk. And we've seen that over the last couple of years, that some of these players who have to earn an offer end up being some of the best prospects in the class, because they go through that development phase. They go through the, you know, learning to block and being an advanced player at the position and taking those steps to be what Penn State wants and needs. They end up being really good prospects for Penn State. And I think Matt Henderson, if Ty Howell went and saw him in the open contact period and went, okay, we're all in on this guy, I think that tells you something about what they saw and the progress they saw from him from last year to even this year.
Well, in your article, it was interesting. The conversation was about his blocking, and that Ty Howell saw him a few months ago and said, that's the area that needs improvement. And a couple months later, they see him and say, he's progressed beyond what we even expected. So I think that speaks a lot about the player and his willingness to do the work to get where he needs to be. But it also leads me to what, you know, just how much, if you're not playing, how do they judge the progress in blocking for a player?
Technique, you know, where do you know where to put your hands on a bag? Do you know how to do the drill? Do you know how to get in a three-point stance? When you get into a three-point stance, are you just mimicking the position, or is it a natural thing for you to get out and use the leverage in which you're trying to create by being low? So a bunch of things that go to the fundamentals and technique of the position okay, well, like we showed you some pointers the last time. This is an example. Just like show some pointers. The player goes out and does some work on their own, work with their high school coach, work with a trainer, et cetera, to get better at those things. And then, you know, we'll see what happens once you've worked on those things. So, you know, just work. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to come in and put guys in the dirt, but it means that he's willing to work on the process. And from a technical standpoint, or from whatever Ty Howell was looking for, Henderson had progressed in that area to a point where they felt comfortable with a guy who, when you watch him on film, is, you know, he's a big X, and the way he runs looks like a tight end. You know, when he turns his shoulders upfield, people ask us about Luke Reynolds and why can't he play wide receiver? There's just a certain way tight ends run, and this is just a thing that I've observed from film that I don't really have a great answer for that. Of like, they're just big dude. They're big receivers that run big. And Matt Henderson, from what I've seen of him, and I'm still doing a lot of work on the individual parts of his game and understanding, you know, what Penn State's off in the receiver position, but there's a force to the way he runs, where he turns up field, lowers his shoulder. It's not the way a receiver runs. So there are those sort of things baked into his profile that I think merit Penn State's enthusiasm in him in a class where they already have a couple of national prospects that are on their radar for that tight end class, plus Brady O'Hara already in the class. So Penn State is doubling and tripling down at a position that they're strong at, both running back and tight end in this class.
You mentioned Brady O'Hara. I was going to ask you about him, and there was talk of him moving to tackle. What's your assessment? Is that where he's going to end up, at tackle?
After the whole Mega Barnwell incident of recruiting a big tight end to play D-line or offensive line, and I until I see some evidence that he's putting on the weight, I don't really want to say anything, because I think he's an offensive lineman. I think he's a tackle. I think he'd be a very athletic player at the position. But until he decides that he's a tackle, it doesn't really matter. So if he comes in and at Penn State and wants to try tight end first, then like the whole process is put on hold, because there's the keeping the weight down and not progressing physically that then would take time once he gets to Penn State. So until we see some fall tape to see how he's grown and developed and if he has put on substantial weight in an offensive lineman sense, then I don't really know.
Very good, T. Frank. We're going to look at the rest of the tight end room when we get back.
We've had such a great response to our F45 Training in State College promotion over the last couple weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football, specifically about the tight end position. Penn State got a new tight end commit last week, Matt Henderson, 6'5", 208 pounds. And it's a fascinating conversation to me, T. Frank, talking about the body types. We mentioned when we were finishing up in quarter number one, Brady O'Hara listed as a tight end, but might end up being a tackle. But you made an interesting point. Until the player wants to make that move, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, he's 6'6", 255 pounds right now, which to me, if he were that fully developed, like, okay, that's an NFL tight end. That's Theo Johnson. He is that walking around at 17 or 18 right now. So it's you always got to hesitate and let the process play out, because I think we all see the same thing. But like if Brady O'Hara doesn't want to put in the work to be an offensive lineman, and I don't say that as a he's lazy or anything, but if that's not what he's passionate about, if he wants, I get it. Like, I grew up wanting to be a receiver, so it's not like I wanted to play, you know, a less glorified position. When he decides to do that, and I have not talked to Brady. Our guys have talked to the way our experts on Blue White Illustrated have talked about it is like we're not looking at him as a tight end counting in the class right now. But he's also, like, in my mind, an athlete until he starts to progress on that side. So it's a lot of work, I guess, is the bottom line of what I'm trying to say is it's a lot of work to do those things and to build your body the right way and to grow and develop. And it's a lot easier when you're 17 or 18 than it is when you're, you know, older. But it is part of that process, kind of like the tight end conversation of you've got to make the transition and put in the work to be that level of prospect, which I think reflects the recruiting rankings where he is a 3-star because nobody's sure what he is right now. So you just give him he's got a good basis and fundamental in his physical profile. So he's got like a good 3-star rating, but nobody knows exactly how to classify him. There's no evidence of what he's going to be at the next level. So kind of like in this class, there's a lot of that, a lot of guys who have 3-star ratings because we don't necessarily know what to do with them just yet.
Well, if he needs some help in that process of putting on some weight, enough weight to become an offensive line, I could get an offensive lineman. I could give him some pointers on that, T. Frank. And that has not, my ability to do that has not lessened as I've gotten older, by the way.
Yeah.
So I'm still able to do that. I have that skill set. All right. As promised, let's talk about the rest of this tight end room. Now, talk about Matt Henderson. First of all, you mentioned there's still a couple more tight ends on their recruiting board, are there not?
Yeah, Andrew Olish is the top guy that I would say that most people have their eye on. He's a Pennsylvania prospect, a guy who you would expect to go to Penn State, somebody who grew up, I think, I shouldn't say he grew up a Penn State fan. I believe he did, but I don't know that for certain. But somebody who, you know, has a strong lean towards Penn State, and, you know, you can see from track record of producing tight ends that go to the NFL, would make a lot of sense for Penn State. And then Lincoln Cure is another guy from Kansas who has been, again, an early identifier. Penn State offered him as a national prospect, somebody way outside the region. But, of course, has a lot of other options closer to home that have jumped on board. So those are the two main players. They were in on Hayden Bradley, who is a really good-looking tight end from Georgia, ultimately committed to Ole Miss. So they've had a lot of top options in this class, which is why Matt Henderson is super interesting, because we've been focused and felt like we knew exactly who was going to be the finalists for Penn State's roster spot in the class of 2025. And here's this curveball that not only comes very fast, but then is the first commitment that I'd say we're comfortable as a pure tight end in the class. So it's been a very interesting recruiting process for the Nittany Lions this year in 2025. That's to say the least.
And you know what? There are certain positions, I've mentioned this previously, that you just trust the people involved in the process. So if Ty Howell and the coaching staff says this is a tight end they want, they've earned that respect and that trust. I'm good with it. Let's talk about the rest of the tight end room. And I mentioned this also before, T. Frank. It just seems like who's next up? You know, you just see it from most recently, it's Brenton Strange to Theo Johnson to Tyler Warren. I guess my first question is, all right, who's next then of the great tight ends? Is it Khalil Dinkins or is it Andrew Rapelier?
Well, Tyler Warren would be the answer here.
I already just assumed that, T-Frank. That one to me is a given. In fact, yeah. I'm a huge Tyler Warren guy. I think he's so athletic for a tight end. I'm curious to see how Andy Kotelnicki will use him because I think he's a mismatch waiting to happen.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that that's a fair place to start in terms of, you know, a known quantity. One of the most known quantities on the offense returning this year. But because of what you said about how Andy Kotelnicki can use him, I think it is important to at least start with that conversation of he's going to be a big part of the offense. He's going to be a big part of what they do overall. If there's a position that touches every aspect of the offense outside of quarterback, it's the tight end who is involved in the pass block game, run blocking and receiving. And I think that's, to me, the area where Penn State's tight ends don't come in one size and one shape and one style. Like, you could say Michigan tight ends generally are better run blockers than they are receivers. And there have been guys, Jake Butt was, if it weren't for injuries, was a guy who could probably have been a complete tight end. But generally, like, if they're going to lean one way or the other, they're going to be guys that are good run blockers and kind of secondary pass options. Again, total generalization here. So not necessarily talking about individual players. You can what about all day. I'm arguing with the comment section already. I don't know why I'm doing that, Jim. Penn
State
tight ends.
You're good at anticipating.
Yes. Brent Strange, run blocker with, you know, good H-back skills. Mike Gesicki, a Y tight end body that runs and moves actually more like a slot receiver. Then you got Theo Johnson, who is, you know, again, I think more of a slot receiver in a tight end's body. And then you've got Pat Freiermuth, who is, you know, a real run blocker as well, and a guy who can do a little bit of both. So I don't know yet where Tyler Warren's skill set lands on that spectrum. Is he going to be more of a complete tight end like Pat Freiermuth, or is he going to be more of a receiver? Because last year, again, we talked about this, he was the better, I think, more consistent of the run blockers against more physical, stronger opponents, but he still wasn't great. And so that's going to be a huge part of this offense this year. He's got to take a step as a run blocker. I think that's the biggest question to me about kind of the holistic part of this offense. And does their run game work the way they want it to? Because you've got a guy who is a threat on the offensive line and as a receiver. Then once we have that established, I think the conversation becomes which one of those two other guys that you mentioned, Khalil Dinkins and Andrew Rapelier, which one of them does the other thing better? Because Rapelier, you would say of the two, is the better potential run blocker. But talking to Curtis Jacobs, he thinks he is a guy that's going to be a really good receiver. He runs really good routes. He's going to high school, back to his time. He was a full tight end in high school, put his hand in the dirt, blocked people, and had some of the better route running skills I've seen of these guys coming into Penn State at that position in a while. But Khalil Dinkins is kind of just a different type of athlete. He's probably the most fluid of all of these guys we've talked about in terms of being as close to a receiver as you can from a movement perspective. But 250 pounds, is he a guy that is fully a run blocker? So of those two guys, who's the most complete to complement Tyler Warren and have those two tight end situations be as threatening as possible in multiple dimensions and directions? And that's really, to me, the battle of this camp is it going to be at that H-back position, Dinkins or Rapelier? And I don't have a good answer for you yet, because we didn't get to see any of that during spring or during the blue-white game.
Well, T. Frank, it almost feels like at Penn State versus, you described the what a Michigan tight end looks like. It feels like at Penn State, because they play two tight ends so often, it's almost like there's two positions at tight end,
there
not
are,
just
yeah.
one.
Yeah, and so to be clear, most of these guys can play both positions, or they learn both of the positions. What I'm talking about, kind of like with the receiver, is what does your skill set fit best? What is your home position? Because there will be times that you'll have Dinkins lined up at the Y, and you'll have Andrew Rapelier, or maybe even Tyler Warren is lined up as an H-back where he played with Theo Johnson. So these guys can play both positions, but which position maximizes their talent? Because we saw when it was in 2022, they had a good balance of Strange being a move tight end that can block, and you can get him on the perimeter, and you can get him on linebackers, and he can seal the edge and give you an opportunity to run behind him, while Theo Johnson was the inline guy. So there's a way to have a good balance of the two skill sets on the field, and Penn State has to find that again, because last year there was a little bit of same with Warren and with Theo Johnson, because both of them are good receivers. Neither of them had taken, by the end of the season, neither had taken that step to be the top run blocker. And the positions are somewhat fluid, but you do generally need one of them to be like a primary run blocker and the other to be a secondary.
How about the other tight ends in the room that are being overlooked right now? Jerry Cross, Joey Schlaffer. I think Cross has been dealing with injuries. He's been nicked up during his time at Penn State. Any updates on him and where he's at?
No, because he's been nicked up and not participating. And that's, you know, kind of the conversation at a couple of positions where Penn State has so much talent and depth and you know, players that are gaining experience, if you're not out there competing, it can be a zero-sum game where you don't... We're talking about Andrew Rapelier because Jerry Cross hasn't taken that step and he hasn't been healthy enough to take that step. So there's not really too much to say other than this has been the thing for Jerry Cross going all the way back to high school where he missed time. I think it was his junior or senior season. I think it was his senior season after COVID 2021. There's not a lot of high school tape. There's not a lot of Penn State tape on Jerry Cross. So hard to tell you what he is or what he isn't because we haven't seen a lot of it.
And real quickly, Joey Schlaffer's the last man up there that we haven't talked about. Seemed like he needed to put on more size when he first came in.
And still does. You know, he's 230 pounds or so. Got a chance to see him in the offseason. Looked bigger. Looked like he put on a good weight. But at the same time, still, to be kind of where he needs to be from a Big Ten perspective and from a Penn State competition perspective, it was never going to be a one-year turnaround for him. He had a big, big frame, and he needed time to put on all that good weight.
All right, T. Frank, that's it for quarter two. Stick around, quarter three. We got your questions. We're going to ask T. Frank.
We've had such a great response to our F45 Training and State College promotion over the last couple weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. I'm Jim. He's T. Frank. It's time for Ask T. Frank. This is where we take your questions for T. Frank. If you want to send in a question, download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button, and away you go. All right, let's start with our friend Josh in Morgantown. I always wonder about these guys who are like from Columbus or from Morgantown or from Ann Arbor. All right,
yeah.
They must have a tough life if they're Penn State fans in that territory, especially for Josh come this fall. All right, here's what Josh says. T. Frank, most coaches had previous coordinator background. What did the James Franklin offense look like? Are there any concepts that have remained constant through Franklin's several offensive coordinators?
So that's a good question, and one that kind of the coordinator days from James Franklin are a little bit preceding me and a little bit preceding consistently reliable film. But what I know and what I've seen is that the Ricky Ronnie offense, I think, is as close to the James Franklin offense as we've seen in you know, since the very beginning when he brought over his staff and the original staff from Vanderbilt. It is, I think, a little bit like what we're going to see. It's a previous iteration of what we're going to see from Andy Kotelnicki in certain aspects where the quarterback option game is a big part of that particular style where you put the defense in conflict because the quarterback's legs add another blocker in the run game and create opportunities then to stress the defense and get explosive plays off of that because you have to, there's multiple threats on every single play. So it is read option heavy, or at least it was. And so having elements of that, I think, are pretty much in line with what James Franklin likes in terms of having that. I hesitate to say college because NFL teams use this. You know, the Eagles use the read option, but the quarterback option and I think streamlining the offense so that the quarterback doesn't have to be elite are two aspects of a James Franklin offense that provide a high floor and a high consistency is the idea from year to year when you can't have a franchise quarterback, identify that guy and then keep him for 10 years.
You talk about the NFL does it also, but that's a more recent phenomenon.
Yep.
That offense, if you go back to James Franklin's coordinator days, it was a college concept much more than it was an NFL concept.
For sure.
Okay, let's go to Mike Marion Heights, who says, T. Frank, on a recent show, you mentioned how Big Ten officials will let defensive backs get away with a lot mm-hmm. when it comes to covering receivers. Do you think the former Pac-12 teams will have a hard time adjusting to how the game is called in the Big Ten? Love the show, Mike.
So first off, Big Ten is not it's not just the Big Ten. College rules allow for more physical contact between defensive backs and receivers. So there is a variation in how things are interpreted and called in different conferences. The Big 12 is vaguely aware that defense exists, but they play off coverage all the time. So they don't play as much press. They don't challenge receivers. They allow them to run their route stem and get into coverage. The idea there is we're going to play so far off that you can't run by us, and then Big 12 receivers run by you anyway. But the Big 10, I think, is more focused on defense, puts better athletes at corner, and they also are, I think, a little more liberal with their use of physicality, going into kind of the stereotypes of the conference. But I guess the point is, you watch the Senior Bowl, and you can tell corners that have not had to seriously shadow a receiver the same way as in other conferences, because there's this thing called a catch technique. A receiver runs the route stem, which is before they've decided and shown you what the route is, whether they're going to break left, right, or keep going, the stem is the part that's the same on every route. And a catch technique is when they run to you, grab them. That's defense for some Big Ten corners. So when you see them have to transition at the Senior Bowl to cover guys without grabbing them, because that's a penalty now after 4 or 5.5 yards, they struggle. So I do think that there is an element, and I'm interested to see, because I don't know, you know, what's the influence of the former Pac-12, Pac-10, whatever it is, on the Big Ten? What's the converse influence? So we'll see, and that's a big unknown, but it is a very much a part of football that I've watched, where you got a lot of corners in the Big Ten that just grab Penn State receivers, and vice versa. Penn State does it too. It's just that is why I've talked about from a receiver position, they need to have the physical ability to break away from those guys and get separation, because those techniques aren't necessarily going away unless there's a change in the rules.
I'm curious, T. Frank, and I have no reason to think that you would have this information, but you add 4 teams from the Pac-12. That means there's more Big Ten games. I assume that means they have to bring in more officials.
Mm-hmm.
Are they bringing in officials from the Pac-12?
Could be. And then it depends on how you're trained, what you emphasize, and those things are a part of... Yeah, they're part of the Big Ten structure. They're a part of... I don't know how any of that stuff works necessarily to discuss in intelligent detail, but there is that variance too of just generally a conference that has played a more wide open style of football. And here's an example, you know, like my in-laws are from Utah, so I have I'm vaguely aware of how Utah plays football. Having watched them in the Rose Bowl and just generally, they're the only team that really plays defense the same way as a Big Ten team in that conference. And you look at what they did to USC, that you look at what they did to Oregon and Washington and some of these offenses that people ooh and ah over, and they play a similar style of defense to Manny Diaz and Brent Pry, and it's very, very similar, actually. And those offenses really struggled against Utah. So I think it's just an emphasis on resources and recruiting and all of those things, as much as it is a difference in officiating.
That adjustment by the Pac-12 teams coming in will be interesting, will be a story. Let's go to Sal and Paoli, who says, what is the single most impactful thing that Andy Kotelnicki can do to help Drew Aller, especially in big games?
It doesn't matter big game or little game. They're all the same from a how you call your offense sort of situation, in that it's entirely dependent on the defense you're about to face. I think the number one thing he can do for Drew Aller is give him, and this is kind of parroting what James Franklin said last year, give him some easy throws. Give him some things to get him in rhythm and confidence. So this run game that's going to be dynamic and it's going to stress the defense on multiple levels, both mentally and literally, will place more emphasis on, you know, stopping the run, which they had last year, by the way. But where the, I think things will change is how you attack those coverages, how you attack those three high defenses, because generally, if you're playing a team that runs the ball or plays two tight ends or two running backs, you play eight in the box and you have cover three. It limits your ability to play different coverages and different coverage shells. So what Penn State saw a good bit of last year was quarters where you play two deep safeties, but you play them in a way where they're able to trigger down in the box. And it's kind of a happy medium there of we're playing four deep, but really one guy's got an eye on the box at all times. That is where I think that they needed to stress and break the defense more with those tight ends. So use the middle of the field where they didn't last year and generate more explosive plays when given the green light. When you have three deep, you know, a single safety and two corners or two safeties and a corner, however you want to dice that coverage, the weakness there is down the field. So being able to intelligently attack those things in a way that gets guys open where the quarterback doesn't have to do all the mental lifting to say, okay, my first read is in here, but I know on the backside I've got this concept, so I need to go over here to my second progression and get through. And that's where Drew Aller was rushing these things of he was saying, like, okay, I see the coverage. I know what it is over here. Now I need to go over here, and I need to get to this. And he would either do that too early or he would rush his footwork. Just having the first read open because the play is better, I think, is the main thing that Andy Kolnicki can do.
I'm glad you brought up that, because I've used that quote often that James Franklin talked about. Get him some easy passes, and I feel contractually obligated to bring up the gym point that I always bring up. Do it on first down when it's easiest to complete a pass. Okay, let's go to Gary in Harrisburg, who says, how big is the loss of King Mack? The fact that he ended up at Alabama would indicate it's probably a pretty big loss.
Yeah, I loved King Mack. His potential, what he did, he was 5'9", but played like he was 6'2". He had great ball skills. He looked like he was going to be an all-around safety. I was telling my wife, like, in a couple of years, I'm going to be like, hey, you remember King Mack? And she's like, who's that? I'm like, yeah, that's the guy that just was selected by the Rams or whatever. You know, I think he's an NFL player. From his talent perspective, I think he's an NFL player. And just the way college football is, the impatience and the NIL and the portal and all those things. I mean, we talked about it on the show. I thought he was going to have a role this year. I thought he was going to play, and I thought he could really excel within that. But, you know, decided to go to the portal, go to Alabama. And I think that it's going to be a problem for Penn State because of their talented young safeties. He was the guy that had the most NFL, college-ready profile. A guy who seemed to understand the defense and seemed to be able to play a heady game while being athletic. There are some guys that have traits and physical tools that were just a little more raw, and those guys are still talented. You still have a depth of talent at that position, but are they ready if something happens this year? I think Lamont Payne, you know, transfer from corner to safety this year might be the guy who also fits that profile the best. So, you know, that's where you are, where you've got guys who you don't feel like are ready yet, and the long-term loss of losing another guy who was versatile. And I think that's the part that I think stings the most, is what you could have done with King Mack. You lose that. Now you've got pieces that I think have specific homes and specific roles in the defense when they hit the field.
It's interesting. What I've read from the Alabama perspective is, oh, here's a guy who's going to be a depth piece for us and help on special teams. Not much different than his role would be this year with Penn State.
Remember I said that last week. Like, what? This doesn't change anything.
Exactly. All right, that's it for quarter number three. We got more to come in quarter four.
We've had such a great response to our F45 Training and State College promotion over the last couple weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. T. Frank, I did want to just add, we were finishing up kind of abruptly the quarter three. There was a last question was about King Mack, and he's ending up at Alabama. And I was making reference to it that his role, you immediately think he moved because he wanted a bigger role. Going to Alabama, that's not necessarily going to be the case for him, though.
I don't know. I don't know Alabama that well from a depth perspective. I think they just lost two safeties to the NFL draft. So what they have on roster, Kalen DeBoer is the new coach. What they have on the roster, does it fit their system and what they want to do? And if not, does King Mack fit that? I haven't really done the work on that particular coaching staff to know what they're looking for. There's opportunity. Like, there's no doubt about that. There is opportunity, but it's not like it's a slam dunk that he's going and the immediate starter. If he is going to be a guy who has to come in and learn and has to come in and have a role, he's doing the exact same thing that was at Penn State. So it has to be a different reason other than just playing time, because that's not guaranteed. Like, even if the guys that are on the roster don't fit the defense perfectly, they're also probably pretty damn talented. So, you know, and so is King Mack. Like I said, I think he fits in either room, but do you have a better opportunity to start and play and have good play if you're in a system that you've been learning for 4 months, 5 months, or, you know, kind of rolling the dice and going somewhere else and having to restart all of that from a position that you need to know what you're doing, you know, from a mental standpoint at safety?
And I never want to be critical of a player who makes what he considers the best decision for himself, and we don't know the rest of the story. And
yeah,
I think there are fans who will be critical. Oh, it's all about NIL. Well, you know what? If you were in that position, you might do the same thing. I have no problem with that either. I think, though, in more of a general conversation, there are a lot of players that go into the portal who either A, never come out of the portal, and B, those who go to another situation because they do think it will be better for them and it doesn't turn out to be that way. And I think this is one of those situations where Penn State's been very good at getting, you know, safeties, cornerbacks, all their defensive backs getting to play on Sundays. And so I think that aspect of it, and especially now the fact that they're going to be playing three safeties, that gives you an extra opportunity. It puts you up one more step on the ladder of getting onto the field. So we wish him luck at Alabama. I'm not sure, though, that it would be the best decision. All right. Speaking of defensive backs, T. Frank, it was kind of interesting. We got kind of an update from Johnny Dixon on his status, which we hadn't really been that aware of. Why don't you just update our listeners with where Johnny Dixon is?
Yeah, so he went undrafted, and following everything post-draft, trying to find out where all of the players went, you know, in the immediate following of who were the UDFAs and where did they sign? Because even the guys that went to the combine, there were a couple of players who, you know, Keaton Ellis, where was he going to go? And finding those guys home. So tracking all that stuff post-draft, it happens pretty quickly. And for about a day and a half, I was just searching Johnny Dixon on the internet to see if anything came up. And nothing came up. And it was only him and I believe Alex Felkins were the only players from Penn State's draft hopefuls that didn't find a home immediately. So trying to do some reporting, trying to dig into the situation. Eventually, Johnny released a note on X the other day saying that he has not signed with the team yet. And the hip injury that he suffered during the Senior Bowl was more serious than first reported because, in his words, teams don't think he's going to play football again. So they are not signing him to a roster, even projecting him as an athlete and as kind of a steal if they can stash him on a practice squad or, you know, one of the NFL's injury-exempt lists. So that's the situation where he's working back from that, but apparently he has not passed any sort of medical checks that NFL teams find they're confident and comfortable with. The issue now is that we're past the mini camps, the rookie mini camps for players to come in and kind of get settled in before OTAs start for the spring. So he's missed that initial window of acclimatization, and then now roster spots are in more serious competition. So just the window is getting smaller and smaller for him to find an NFL team. And if he's not fully cleared for all those activities, there's no incentive to sign him for an NFL team.
And then you risk this all going into next year where you've got the next batch of players coming out. Yeah. That's a very difficult position to be put in. And I know Penn State fans, and you made reference to this in the article, that you know Penn State fans were not happy with him not playing in the bowl game, him and Kalen King. And I'm not sure if he had played and played well, that makes any difference because he got hurt in the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
But it's also an indication, boy, injuries can happen anywhere. And these players, they have a very short shelf life and it could get even shorter in an instant.
Yeah. So that's the reason I brought that up is because in his tweet, he said it's not the reason he went undrafted is not because he didn't play in the bowl game. So he referenced that himself to kind of clarify the situation. The NFL isn't blackballing him because of a lack of loyalty or anything. It's because the medical and also because he couldn't go to the combine and work out. So this is kind of going back to like you can sign a player if you think it long term they're going to be able to contribute and you think that it's something they can recover from and you feel it's worth the time and investment. So Johnny didn't have a chance to go to the combine and show off any of his skills. And while his tape is good, I think he's a good corner who can play in the NFL, he didn't have the sort of tape to get him drafted with all of these issues anyway. So that means he doesn't have the tape that you would bet on him as a UDFA. So he's kind of left in this situation where at the Senior Bowl, where he was going to try and prove that he can be that guy, he got hurt before he could prove it and didn't look good before he got injured and then couldn't prove on the physical side, the bet on my potential side, he also lost that. So that's, I think, the compounding factor in why teams have stayed away from him. Understanding I don't know the medical. I don't understand what the injury is. I have some guesses of maybe what it might be, but I have genuinely no idea what it would be. So we do know that it was a hip injury. He clarified that where they initially they thought it was a glute injury, but it turned out to be a hip injury. And that is, I think, complicating things because when you start getting into the joints, whatever part of the hip it is, I mean, things can get pretty complicated in there where there's literally a lot of moving parts.
Well, when he makes reference to NFL teams think he may not play, mm-hmm. and I don't want to go overboard with that, but if you have a player who, if all things went well, he still would have been a late round draft pick, right,
yep.
T. Frank?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So you're already on that cusp of whether you're going to get drafted or not anyway. And then you have a perhaps career-threatening injury, you're not going to get picked up by another team. It just, that's the way it works. He's going to have to come back physically, prove himself. And like I said, I'm just not sure how that process works now. for him. If he's out for, you know, this season, okay, he's not going to hook up with any team. Does he go back into the draft for next year, or is there a point where he becomes a free agent?
No, he's just a free agent at this point, and that's the bonus here, is that once he's healthy, and if he can prove he's got the athletic skill that teams want to invest in him, then he's free to sign with whatever team wants to sign him. So he doesn't have to go back into the draft. The draft is an entry process. It's not always like the best one for the player, because you don't get to choose your situation. You don't get to choose what's best for you. You get selected by a team. So once you're into the NFL ecosystem, you can sign with whomever you want, whatever the best situation is. So I think that's, from that perspective, you know, as soon as he's healthy and he can prove his athletic traits, then, you know, he's free to sign with any team.
I think also, T. Frank, this is one of those cases, too. We were talking earlier about King Mack leaving Penn State for Alabama, and we don't know specific reasons why that happened, why he made the shift.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not playing time, the conjecture is, okay, it might be about NIL. And that has a certain sting to it as far as fans are concerned. Oh, they're going for the money. Well, that's not such a bad thing, especially when you realize here what's happening to Johnny Dixon.
Yeah.
Okay. For these players, these careers can be very, very short, or even, you know, stop any day. So if Johnny Dixon had made a move a year ago doing it for NIL, especially in hindsight with an injury, you got to look at it and say, you know what? I get it. And this is what these players face. And maybe we as fans should look at this movement a little bit differently than we do.
Also, for a guy who had been in college, I think, since 2019, somebody who had his COVID year of eligibility, like he had played a lot of football. Not playing in one game might hurt your feelings, but in the long the long history of football and playing, like, it's not a poor decision to reduce your risk, because I think we've heard before of people taking out insurance policies on their draft position, and if they get injured, then they can collect on that insurance policy. But you have to have a valuation high enough to actually get one of those policies, from what I understand. And I'm not an expert on insurance, NFL insurance policies. Among the many things I'm not an expert on, you have to have a certain criteria. And we talk about his draft stock. It was never, whether he played in the game or not, whether he went through a combine and was healthy or not, I don't think he was necessarily higher than maybe a fourth round pick. So what's that worth? Is that worth buying an insurance policy? So it is, you're right. This is all precarious. It's all on the edge of a knife when you play football. And that's why, you know, I think the stresses and the different challenges of this make it so unique in this modern world of football that is so high stakes from a money perspective and a fame perspective.
All right. Very good, T. Frank. That's going to have to be the last word. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
We've had such a great response to our F45 Training and State College promotion over the last couple weeks. They've agreed to extend it one more time for our listeners. Now that the students are gone, you have an incredible opportunity to take advantage of their functional fitness classes. This is still running through May 21st. For all Keystone Sports Network listeners, you're able to try out F45 Training in State College for 2 weeks free. F45 State College provides you the benefits of one-on-one personal training in a group class environment. F45 State College is the only fitness studio in State College with body composition technology where you can track your real-time progress, leveraging science-backed data to reach your goals even faster. Your free 2 weeks begins the first class you attend. Just make sure you begin before May 21st to take advantage of this limited offer.